Good evening. Welcome to DBSA Boston. My name is Mary Johnston. I'm very excited for tonight's speaker, Joey Edson. She's a Wakefield resident, so a local gal, and she's written a compelling book called Derail on the Bipolar Express. I've read it, and it is riveting.
Thank you. <laughs> And I
will let her tell her story, and please welcome Joey.
Can you hold this? Hi, thank you so much, Mary, and thank you everyone for coming. I really appreciate it. It's different being here in this situation because I have been to the support groups before, and of course, both of my sons, whom I wrote the book about, have been admitted to McLean several times, over 25 times. So I'm very familiar with the campus, and I really appreciate that everyone came. This is my book, Derailed on the Bipolar Express. Has anybody read it yet? Oh, great. Thank you. So great. So you might have some questions. A lot of times people will ask me why I wrote the book. And the primary reason for me writing my book was to fulfill a promise to my late husband, who was my son's father. My husband passed away 5 years ago from throat and head and neck cancer. And about a week before he passed, he said, "Promise me that you'll write a book about our sons." We had been through so many hospitalizations, incarcerations, and issues that we've gone through with the sons were compelling, and they were scary, and they were sad, and they were all of the above, as you all know, if they're your sons. But we got through them. And every time we get through each incident, turn to me and say, write a book. Or he'd say, another chapter for your book. So after he passed, I sat down on several occasions and tried to write the book. And I had a hard time starting. And one of the reasons I had a difficult time was because I sort of lost track of who was hospitalized when, where each son was. One was at McLean, one was in Bridgewater, one was in Worcester, one was in Taunton. I'd get all mixed up on the dates, and I felt like those facts were really important at the time. So I'd sit down and I'd try to write, and I'd get all nervous about not writing the right date or the right time or the right incident. And then I met Jim, who is now my new husband of 8 months. Wonderful guy. And I told him when I met him, when I first started dating and things became serious, I said, if you're going to get interested in me and involved with me, you need to know about my sons. And you need to know that you need to embrace my sons and help me on this journey. And he thought about it, and he said he would, and he's wonderful, a good source of support. I also told him about my desire to write a book. And he said, why haven't you started? And I told him, I try, and I keep forgetting about dates and times. And he said, you know, things don't have to be sequential. You don't have to write your book in order. Just sit down when you feel like you're ready to write, and write. And I did. And I started, if you read my book, the first chapter is pretty riveting. It's one incident that happened with my younger son, Kayvon. And then from there, things just flowed. And all these memories came flooding back, and all these times. And they weren't maybe in order, but they were all important to my son's recovery. So I also, one of the main reasons I wrote the book was my goal of writing it was to help other parents and family members who have children with bipolar disorder or substance abuse or any type of mood disorder. I wanted to help other parents. I remember several times leaving McLean Hospital, AB1, AB2, whatever unit my son was hospitalized on, and you'd always have to get unlocked out of the locked unit. And I remember on so many occasions leaving that unit feeling sad and depressed and frustrated, and the wonderful employee at McLean Hospital would turn to me or my husband and say, you know, it's going to get better. It's just going to take time, but it is going to get better. And then he'd say, try to have a nice night. And then I would get on that elevator, usually with other parents, and none of us would speak. We'd just be riding down that elevator, sort of speechless and sad and depressed, but all experiencing the same thing. We had someone in our family or a close friend who was in that unit because they were mentally ill, and you feel bad about it. So I wanted to share my experiences with other people by writing this book, and I'm hoping that that is the main goal now. And so I'm going to read from two chapters of the book, and I have to be honest, the book is also written for people that don't know anything about mental illness. So if anything seems redundant or you say, well, I know that, it's because some people that are reading the book don't know. So I'm trying to erase the stigma of mental illness and give people a picture of what it's like to live with someone who is mentally ill. And I'm going to read from two chapters, and at the end I'll answer questions. I'd love to answer questions, and but it's going to be taking me about 15 minutes to get through the readings. I hope you can bear with me, okay? So the first chapter that I'm reading about is about to try to paint a picture of my two sons. One is TJ, and he's the older son, and the other one is Kayvon, born Kevin, but now goes by Kayvon. They both have bipolar disorder, and they both have substance abuse. And Kayvon also has an underlying personality disorder. So this is called The Same Yet Entirely Different. Mental illness is scary. You've seen the crazy person talking to himself or herself, babbling nonsensically, or ranting and raving like a lunatic in public places. The person you avoid making eye contact with, the person you steer clear of. Imagine that that person is your child, your husband, your wife, mother, father, sister, or brother. And try to keep in mind that that person is not responsible for their actions. A symptomatic mentally ill person is someone who is suffering. It's not easy to look mental illness in the face because it's alarming to witness a person in the depths of psychosis. Many of TJ's most bizarre incidents of psychosis could also be described as fascinating. I don't want to mislead you into believing that I've ever enjoyed witnessing the mayhem that occurred when TJ was psychotic. That's far from the truth. It's like watching a runaway train. You can't believe it's happening. You know it's not going to end well. Yet you can't take your eyes off its power, strength, and speed. Kayvon's mania differs from TJ's mania. Kayvon's mania is grandiose, flamboyant, and often comical. TJ's mania is loud, destructive, alarming, and often dangerous. Kayvon believes his outlandish and eccentric behavior to be nothing out of the ordinary. He tends to go to extreme measures to draw attention to himself while making poor and inappropriate decisions. TJ, on the other hand, hides in fear when his mania and psychosis take control of his mind. He becomes convinced that a government agency is watching him. He runs, hides, and panics. I've often found TJ barricaded behind his bedroom door with the shades drawn, convinced that the CIA or FBI were hunting him down. Other times, TJ had left the house dressed in army fatigues, armed with a backpack containing a paintball gun, trolling the subways and streets of Boston in search of his imaginary assailants. I've often wondered and been worried about what TJ may be capable of doing when he becomes this paranoid. Kayvon, on the other hand, has been watched by the FBI for years. Since the incident at the Boston Marathon finish line, Kayvon has been placed on an FBI terrorism watch list. The night of the incident, the FBI confiscated his laptop and discovered disturbing posts that glamorized the actual surviving marathon bomber. TJ's paranoia during times of psychosis and mania is frightening and sad. It's frightening to observe the magnitude of fear and confusion brought on by delusional thoughts. I recall driving TJ to an event in Boston in my convertible. He asked that I drive him to meet his friends instead of taking public transportation. It was a wonderful, lovely summer evening, yet TJ was clearly experiencing a psychotic episode. He was argumentative and agitated. He told me he was afraid to take public transportation because people were after him. I tried to convince him otherwise, and he grew more agitated and began yelling at me. When I asked him to calm down, he literally jumped out of my convertible in the middle of Stero Drive. I'm surprised he wasn't killed. The similarities of their illnesses are fascinating. Both of my sons obsess over numbers when they begin to slip into mania. I've been informed that this is a classic symptom displayed in anyone who is bipolar. Numbers help the mentally ill organize the disorders and cluttered minds. TJ, while on the brink of psychosis, obsesses over the theory of pi, or 3.14. Kayvon becomes consumed with numerology, or the numbers and patterns created in one's name. During an early manic episode, Kayvon went to the extreme of having the numerological table permanently tattooed to his wrist. Also typical of anyone who was manic, both sons stopped eating and sleeping for days. I have been alarmed and astonished by the amount of time TJ and Kayvon could stay awake and extremely alert without sleep during manic episodes. This manic insomnia, coupled with a lack of fuel, fueled the psychosis that would eventually follow. Unfortunately, a common thread they both share when manic is an enormous amount of anger. The anger is often directed at me. This display of anger can be cruel and quite alarming. I've been informed for a manic person to display anger toward the people whom they care for the most. That may be true, but it's still hurtful. They argue, pick and say things that can be painful to hear. TJ can get physically aggressive while angry. Past manic episodes have resulted in physical altercations with close friends and dangerous fights with his father. He's also pushed me, threatened me, and screamed obscenities. Kayvon, on the other hand, picks verbal fights. He becomes mean and spiteful. His anger is also threatening, but not in a physical manner. When Kayvon's manic anger rages, he takes enormous effort to entertain arguments. As one of his therapists noted, Kayvon tries to draw you into his web of rage and anger. The best thing to do is let him rant, but don't participate. Don't get caught in his web. You'll never win. It takes every ounce of control to not engage in his wrath. The things he says and posts on social media while enraged are vengeful and despicable. Over the years, he has burned many bridges. Both of my sons have been diagnosed with the same illness. They each express symptoms that are considered classic for people living with bipolar disorder. At the same time, these symptoms are often quite unique for each of them. Showing the distinctions between the two of them is my way of painting a picture for you. When my sons were younger at the beginning of this journey, I was told that a majority of the people who are diagnosed with bipolar disorder may someday attempt suicide. That was a scary thing to hear and difficult to imagine at the time. Thankfully, the other similar characteristic that both my sons share is that they've each promised me they would never kill themselves. There is hope. Thank you. Thank you. And I'm going to read one. This is a shorter chapter, but I think it gives you because you're at a support group meeting, it talks about support and help, and that I really feel that after a long period of time, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. So this chapter is called The Light at the End of the Tunnel. I can see it now. It's been a long, dark journey, but I can now see a glimmer of hope shining off into the distance. The light seems to be growing stronger and brighter with each passing year. That's the key. Time, persistence, and maturity have brought enlightenment. 15 years ago, I sat in a support group meeting held at McLean Hospital and addressed issues common to parents of children with mental illness and mood disorders. I attended this meeting about 1 year after TJ's initial diagnosis. I sat in a large circle along with other groups of parents who are raising children varying from ages 17 to 50 with mental illness. The stories were all similar. Many were depressing or painfully heartbreaking. Stories of adults who have lost their jobs, their homes, destroyed their marriages, had been arrested, or were now homeless. The most valuable piece of advice I garnered from that evening, I have to read from this because I can't see my book. The one statement that gave me hope was spoken by the group facilitator, who was also a parent of with bipolar disorder. He said that age brought wisdom. Sometimes all it takes is the maturity that comes with age in order for someone to accept their illness. You just have to be patient. I want to be clear about this. Don't be misled. With age comes acceptance. That doesn't mean that a person will outgrow their illness. They don't ever outgrow their illness. They learn how to grow along with their illness. Eventually, they learn to manage their medication, deal with the stressors that often exacerbate the mood disorder, and continue to attend counseling on a regular basis. In the early years, our hopes and dreams that our sons would someday live a productive life and a happy life were often filled with doubt. Frankly, there were many days that I thought I would find one of them, that I thought one of them would die from a drug overdose. When TJ lived at home, there were several mornings I would enter his bedroom to wake him up, holding my breath and wondering if I'd find him alive. Living with uncertainty and chaos became a way of life. Yet during those tumultuous years at the beginning of my son's diagnosis, I had to figure out ways to help them cope until they reached a point in their lives when it would finally click. Since their initial diagnosis at age 17 for TJ and age 19 for Kayvon, that day would be a long time coming. Many times we wondered if they'd ever get it. TJ has finally accepted his illness and is working on establishing a life for himself while managing his symptoms. For TJ, maturity has brought wisdom. On the other hand, there are many days that I still wonder if Kayvon will ever get it. He is now 30 years old. He has accepted that his bipolar disorder, that he has it, but is reluctant to do what is necessary in order to lead a productive life. He struggles to adapt and comply with the norms of society. He is a square peg trying to fit into a round hole. His bipolar disorder is being managed, but his underlying personality disorder complicates everything. Maybe Kayvon will get it someday, maybe not. So how do I survive day to day? How do I manage and maintain my sanity throughout all these years of insanity? I never give up. During the worst of times, when one or both sons were experiencing psychosis and mania, I simply keep my head above water, wade through all the crap, and find my way to safety. It takes persistence, patience, and strength. I must be stronger than their illness in order to survive, because they rely on my strength for survival. The journey has not ended, it never will, but now I can say, I've been there, I've done that, I can deal with that. During those 15 years while my sons were gaining maturity and learning to accept their illness, I was discovering ways to help. I'd managed to navigate the mental health system, cultivated the means for securing services that my sons needed, and learned the importance of caring for myself. Thank you. Thank you. I am going to entertain questions. I just have one disclaimer. I'm not a psychiatrist or a therapist or a nurse, so I don't really know the efficacy of a lot of the mood medications. I can just tell you, life experience, but I don't have any science behind anything like that. But I'll be happy to answer any questions. Oh, and I have my book available if anybody wants a book, and I'll sign it. And if you brought a book, I'll sign it too. Oh, and there's a question over there, too. Hi.
Not so much a question, but just a comment. It takes a lot of strength and a lot of willingness. As a parent, I'm sure, I mean, I was a special needs child myself, just to be able to stay above ground, stay above water, and to to be able to pull through just the way that you have managed to do so and to write a book on top of it, that's something pretty special that I think a lot of us can take home and learn from.
Thank you, I appreciate it. Writing the book was cathartic, so helpful to write. Definitely, thank you.
I found your words very interesting. I'd like to buy your book for my sister and her husband and my mother. Your book sounds really wonderful and a breakthrough of the system.
Thank you, I appreciate it. Thank you for your support. I think the more people that know about and say talk about mental illness, the more it's out in the open. And this has definitely opened a lot of eyes for people that have bought my book that don't know anything about mental illness. So I think it will hopefully erase a lot of the stigma.
I just wanted to ask you to speak a little bit more about how their substance abuse problems made their bipolar diagnosis more difficult to deal with.
One of the reasons, because I think the alcohol and drugs interact with the medications, but the reasons my sons were, TJ was diagnosed first with bipolar disorder and substance abuse, he was trying to calm himself down to sleep. He had years of insomnia because his mind was racing. He admits to me that when he was in fifth grade, he started drinking NyQuil every night to get to sleep. Because his mind was so, he just couldn't sleep. His mind was racing. He had that unquiet mind, typical of bipolar disorder. And then as he got older, he started using more drugs, pot and cocaine and LSD and other types of drugs. And, of course, that interaction. He had his first psychotic break was when he was 17, I'm sorry. And when he was blood tested, they found substances in his blood. Does that answer your question? TJ was using drugs before he was diagnosed. So he was brought to the emergency room because he was psychotic. And when they drug tested him, they found drugs in his system. And then it was his first hospitalization at 17. And then when he came home, he was prescribed lithium. And his first psychiatrist thought that perhaps his psychotic break was due to drug abuse and maybe testosterone. And he took him off the lithium, and within 6 weeks, he was back in the hospital. TJ's been sober for 12 years. TJ's here. His sobriety is what I think made the difference in his life a lot. Kayvon still dabbles with pot and alcohol, and I think that interacts with his medication.
Oh, yeah. Hello.
Oh, sorry.
Hi. First, a comment. I thought it was an excellent book. I have bipolar disorder. It was a very unusual presentation that came late in life, in my 40s. It was sort of a medication-induced mania. And before it happened, I was a psychiatric OT. I had never been in any trouble. So the book was excellent. It was difficult for me to read, just thinking of the things I put my parents through. I didn't get into a whole lot of trouble, but because I was somebody that had never had any issues, all of a sudden I was drinking, I was acting out, whatever. So my parents read it. They thought it was excellent.
Oh, thank you.
And my other question is, and I don't know if I'm comfortable, you're sitting right here. Did you notice in childhood, were there signs, anything that kind of tipped you off that things were unusual in childhood with your boys?
TJ was actually the type of kid that never slept well. He always had nights where I would say, you need to go to sleep. He's still an insomniac. So when he was in fifth grade, he was a typical fifth grader. It wasn't until probably his freshman year of high school when he started doing those classic things you were told to look for, changing friends, quitting sports, not getting out of bed, not wanting to do anything, that we took him to a therapist, and that was when he was probably 14, and the therapist thought he was depressed. But he didn't go on any meds. He refused to take meds for that. Kayvon, on the other hand, was diagnosed with ADD when he was in second grade. And when I brought him to Children's Hospital to speak to the neurologist, they did say to me, sometimes bipolar disorder is diagnosed in children that are diagnosed with ADD when they're younger. They said they've seen a carry through. But again, I'm not a doctor, so and I've never seen any of the studies. But Kayvon's always been very flamboyant. But he's also gay, so he's always flamboyant by nature anyways. So, but as far as noticing when they were little, no, they had pretty typical childhoods.
I did have a couple of questions. So your son, who's been followed by the FBI, have you ever come to McLean? First of all, how do you navigate that with the medical records? Is he just clear? Is he just honest about that? Or does he talk about it when he's here? Or does he...
Yes, he does. As a matter of fact, Kayvon, I don't know, if you haven't read your book, I'll just give you a little history. Kayvon was... A year after the marathon bombing, there was Boston Strong Day, 2015, it was a big deal, and he was the one that was found at the finish line chanting Boston Strong, all dressed in black, with a backpack that he put on the finish line. He was arrested. It was national news, it was all over everything. And he was sent to Bridgewater, and then when he was cleared from Bridgewater, he did spend time at McLean. But up until this year, every other year, he has gone back to McLean willingly around the time of the Boston Marathon because he has such anxiety over it.
But do they ever, not let him leave?
No. The FBI watches his posts that he posts on social media.
Right.
He was, about a year ago,
do they ever not let him leave because of, he's honest and forthcoming. I was here and I actually didn't understand what was happening, and I didn't know it because I was psychotic myself. But they understood what was happening, and they wouldn't let me leave. And I suppose the reason they wouldn't let me leave is because I didn't understand. But now I'm kind of afraid to go inpatient, but I needed to go inpatient a few times. And I was just wondering how to navigate sort of that. I mean, when you say FBI or CIA, it's a big deal, and they kind of freak out. So I'm just wondering how you navigate that with the doctors, because I'm afraid if I say, this is what happened, that they won't let me leave again. And I work. I mean, I work 60 hours a week, and I have a busy life. I can't go inpatient and be forced to stay there permanently. So
I think once he realized what he did was wrong, when he had the enough wisdom to say, okay, I now realize I shouldn't have put that post on social media, and I now know that McLean let him go because he had, he was shown... the awareness of what he did was wrong, right?
Thank you.
Yeah. Sorry, you have to get a microphone.
Thank you. I have read your book. I really recommend it. I found it very enlightening. My son was diagnosed with bipolar disorder just this past year. And I was surprised by the ongoing kind of psychotic episodes that I hadn't realized corresponded to some sorts of bipolar. Could you talk about that, and could you talk about the process of getting a diagnosis, whether there was a concern about schizophrenia?
Yeah, both of my sons have never been diagnosed with schizoaffective or schizophrenia. They have psychosis of imagining things are happening, but they don't have those classic symptoms of schizophrenia. The bipolar disorder that TJ on a typical day, especially, you would never know there was anything wrong with him. It's only when his mania starts to become psychosis. And with TJ, he can correct me if I'm wrong, but with him, he will fight you tooth and nail. He will wait till he's absolutely at his worst state before he has to be either arrested or brought in by ambulance to be admitted to a hospital. Kayvon, on the other hand, has actually called McLean and said, I need to come. It's different. He doesn't get to that point of paranoia that TJ gets to. But they're not always psychotic or manic. It's only when their symptoms come out, when they're not stable. Did that answer your question?
Well, I don't know how typical it is in bipolar disorder to exhibit psychosis under mania when one is manic. I mean, it can present in many different ways, and I just wonder if that was something you had discussed and learned a lot about.
Well, the mania usually ends up in psychosis if it's not treated. So it's usually hypomania, and then mania, and then psychosis if the mania is not treated. But there's all different types of bipolar disorder. And again, I'm not a doctor, but I know both of my sons have been diagnosed with bipolar 1. I know there's bipolar 2. There's all different, bipolar with other underlying things.
Yes,
schizoaffective. But they have the classic, I was told that if you looked in a dictionary, TJ's would be there as the typical classic bipolar disorder.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Glad you guys have questions.
I too struggle with the fact that what I put my parents through. And you said that in the beginning, you couldn't gather your thoughts and memories of anything in particular. Is that kind of like a forgiveness, or is it a type of a parent something, like unconditional something that a parent gives a child or something like that? Can you help me understand that maybe my parents are okay with how I turned out?
Absolutely. Someone asked me that. I just recently spoke at a college, and someone said to me, why don't you just give up? Why haven't you given up and walked away from your kids with all that especially Kayvon has put me through? And they're my children. I love them. They have an illness. It's chronic. If my child had diabetes, would I give up on my child with diabetes? If my child had any kind of illness, which is chronic, I would never give up on them. I can't imagine. I love them. And once TJ was hospitalized, and he was hospitalized for quite a while, it was a really difficult time. And a social worker even said, why don't you just let him live in a group home and accept that he can't live by himself, because he had been hospitalized a few times when he was living on his own, even with support. And I said, you don't know TJ when he's capable. When he's not manic, he is the most capable person, the most artistic, very intelligent, and he's perfectly functionable. He can function on his own. And I would never give up on my sons. And I don't think your parents would have given up on you. And they love you. And it's a mother's love, but it's also a father's love. And again, mental illness is an illness. Mental health is health. And you wouldn't give up on your child if they had a heart problem or a physical problem, just like I won't give up on my sons. Thanks.
Thank you for sharing so openly with all of us. One of the things that when I came to DBSA first, and ever since then I've been looking for, is a group called Open Exchange. Where family members and people with personal experience with depression or bipolar talk openly with people from other families. Have you had much experience talking with other people with, I guess, bipolar 1 is most applicable to your experience, people, not just family members, but people who've been affected by bipolar 1 in addition to your own family members, and how helpful have you found that to you?
Well, since I wrote the book, of course, people all over the place are writing to tell me that they, you know, glad I'm sharing and that they've had similar situations, and I think support groups are wonderful. I think that it's really important to open up and talk. And that was the one thing that I said at the very beginning is I would be visiting my children at McLean, and nobody spoke to each other. The parents, you just were closed off. It was like a wall you put around you. And I think that's a wall that everyone has as a parent with a child with mental illness. I wish more people would talk about it. I always said, you know, when my child was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, no one had a fundraiser for me, no one had a parade, no one bought meals. And when my children are hospitalized, I have to beg people to send cards. They won't visit, because who wants to visit a psych unit? But talking to other parents is so helpful. And I think I would love to do that more. I would love to be involved in this type of a situation more. Does that answer your question?
Okay, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity for people with lived experience themselves to hear you talk very openly about your experience as a family member. Sometimes within our own families, there's either more hesitation or more of an emotional response. Within my family, in three generations, there's been one person out of three generations who hasn't had an episode of major depressive disorder. So within my family, pretty much everyone has had personal experience and been a family member. And I really appreciate the opportunity that you've given us to hear a family member's experience. Do you think that you would find it threatening or uncomfortable to hear directly from people in addition to your own sons who had personal experience with bipolar 1 or other mental illness? Or do you,
no.
You would find that
informative? I would find that informative, yes, yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Joey has books for sale that she can sign for you up here at the front, and let's give her a big hand. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mary.
Okay, we're going to take a 5-minute break and then we'll do announcements.
Sorry.
I was going to sit here.
I wanted to thank
you.
I'm the president.
Oh.
And actually, I have a daughter who also has mental illness.
Oh.
The book
was nice to meet you. Thank you. Should have brought it. I would have signed it for you.
It's fabulous. Book. Yeah, really, really good.
Thank you.
Coming.
Thank you so much.
To our group some night.
Yes, I would love that.
I'd love to have
can
you.
We pay with credit card or no?
No, I have. Okay. I have cash, and for change, I also have Venmo.
You have what?
Venmo, do you know what that is? Yeah. It's like an online payment thing. Yeah, sorry.
Well,
yes, what's your name?
Peter. I'm the one that's originally responsible for this.
Hello, everyone. Judy does my hair. To put it to Monica. At the welcome table.
Monica.
So and Monica?
Here, Mrs. McKees had to.
That's right. You brought my book at Sweet Bay.
Yeah.
That's right. So nice to meet you.
It took a while. We talked on the phone, but
I know.
Okay, well, I have everyone's attention. This Saturday is the NAMI Walk, and I have 34 people signed up. I'm so excited. And we've already raised $5,400. We've already passed last year when we raised $51. So thank you all for your hard work. And I just want to thank you all for coming on Saturday. Because
and I have bookmark too.
NAMI is really, to me, very special.
Nice meeting you.
I think if you don't continue to be
very grateful, I'm a NAMI family.
It won't go away. And I think it's important to all of us. So I'm hoping that you will all be there and we'll have a great time. My captain's here next to me with us.
I would love to do something with NAMI. I'm not really involved, so I would love to someday. Oh, thank you. Do you want me to sign them?
Yes.
To you or? Oh, just sign them.
Just sign them.
And let's see, what else do I want to talk about? Let's see.
Put it in my library.
If you are comfortable about being in the picture, it might be on the Pole Express.
He's got the change. He's my change guy.
I frankly like to have my picture taken, so I don't mind.
I would love to do some more stuff with NAMI. Contact me.
I'll give you a card. No books right now.
It's $10 each. Sorry.
Hi. Raise money.
I'm Laurie. Hi.
All right. But anyway, so in a couple of minutes, we will do more than that. But I am looking forward to seeing you.
You know, you could write a book. Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Did you want to get a book?
Yes.
Oh, great.
We already have a lot of volunteers for
LRI.
So thank you for those who signed up to volunteer and help Dario.